out drinking in the back of El Camino.
As a kid.
Was a skid.
No one knew me by name.
Crashed my own house party because nobody came.
Welcome to another episode of Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. My name is Nathan Bishop, the managing editor of Lookout Landing, and this is episode 7, in which we discuss recent happenings on the team and look forward with anticipation and dread in equal measure. Today I am joined by geologist, spelunker, brewer, craftsman, and lover, David Skiba. David, how are you today?
You are now entering the no spin zone.
Please explain what that means.
You are now done spinning.
I am no longer spinning. Thank you, David. I appreciate that.
You did a real goldsmith grind at the beginning of that.
You are now into
the meat grinder.
I may have heard from a certain someone who was dismayed to find that the Twitter handle meat grinder was already taken. Which was interesting. The other person who's going to be talking to you today is punk rock aficionado and food critic and professional wine swiller, Scott Weber. Mm. Scott, how are we?
Those are all apt things. I'm drinking beer right now, but I drank wine last night and a lot of it at a very good restaurant, indeed. So very accurate.
Good, good. So right, so what we're trying to do is we're trying to be a more concise, accurate and professional show this week.
Yeah, you really Ira-glassed the beginning of that.
That's what I was going for. We're gonna intro with like Dvorak's string symphony or something, and something classy just to make it seem like we actually know.
Sounds good. I'd like to just take a moment right now for a sponsor. Do you not have time to go to the post office? That's a good thing. Stamps.com, it's here for you. Also, make your own website on Squarespace.
They're good.
I got to hit in all the podcast sponsors because they all sponsor us.
They're going to dump us after you messed up the intro for them.
It's true.
We're making a lot of money with them.
I'll bring it back with my Blue Apron, which I enjoy making. With Blue Apron, all the ingredients arrive fresh to your door, already frozen and perfectly portioned. There's no waste, and everything is fresh and delicious. Can be made in 30 to 60 minutes and perfectly set for two. Try it today and enter the promo code LOOKOUTLANDING.
That's a lot of characters for a promo code.
Lookout Landing?
I think it's too many.
What was it at FanDuel? You can just literally enter anything and it works?
You can just enter A, B, C, D.
No, you know why they do that is because then they can track which of their ads are most effective and where the attach rate is greatest. That's why they change the code every single time it airs.
You are blowing my mind right now,
Scott. Blowing my mind, Frank.
Mm. Hey, guys, this is purportedly a baseball podcast that orients itself around the Seattle Mariners, who are playing right now because Cleveland exists in its own special time vortex where it is 7:10 p.m. at first pitch on June 1st or something.
Yeah, sort of the Pakistan of America in that way.
And others.
Shout out Kumail Nanjiani.
Since last week, it has not even been a full week since we last spoke. The Mariners have had two off days and then played three games in New York against the Yankees. David, you saw one of them. Which game was that?
I saw the Friday game.
Oh, that
and
was,
it was
a good one.
That was a joy to behold.
Indeed, the team took two out of three in New York. I think we all would have liked to have had the last one since it was a one-run loss. But given the way the pitching matchups worked, the way that the team... the pitching staff kind of high-wired, got out of a lot of guys-on-base situations. Kind of felt like you were pretty happy to get two out of three. Were you guys all in the same boat there?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's so tough when you go on a losing streak because it's like they can win the next, two series in a row and they would be at 500? That's correct.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. If they take two out of three in Cleveland, they're back at 500.
Which this is... going on right now, and they are losing 3-0, which is not ideal.
No, that's actually if they go 2-3, or if they take 2 of 3 in Cleveland, they go to 6-7.
Damn, math's a bitch, isn't it?
So you got to win two series in a row.
Well,
if you're winning 2-1.
Sweeps help. Losing streaks are bad.
Oh, that's right. There it goes.
This is why people come to lookoutlanding.com for the hard-hitting statistical analysis. Anything, David, you only saw one game. Scott, did you get to watch more games during the series?
Yeah, I did. I saw all the games, actually. Nate Karns just continues to be one of the most confusing pitchers to watch because his stuff is so good.
I agree.
It is so good when it goes where he wants it to go. And, you know, I actually really, really enjoy watching him pitch. I don't enjoy 100 pitches through five innings, and I don't enjoy the walks. But when he's making bats miss and stranding, I mean, that game on Friday was just hilarious. The Yankees stranded how many runners at third? It was ridiculous. Yeah. But I like watching Karns pitch. The weekend was good. You know, and Sunday's game really could have gone either way, so that was not really one to lament too much. Iwakuma is not looking great, but it is early, and I think that he's got enough track record to not be concerned about that yet. So
he went deep, though, right? Didn't he go seven?
He ended up going seven, which I think was the longest outing of anybody.
He kind of needed to go deep, but he also didn't because this bizarre schedule where they have they're basically playing on like the NBA playoffs schedule right now.
I want to get to that, but first I wanted to circle back to Karns because I totally agree with your take on. And David, you saw that game on Friday, right?
I did. Yeah.
Karns, I totally, Scott, I think you nailed the assessment there. His stuff is so good. That biting breaking ball that he throws in the dirt is such a good swing and miss pitch. But you know who he is, and I think I made this joke on Twitter. What I called him was Witness Protection Program Gilmesh, because that's who he is. He's Gilmesh reincarnated. He's got the stuff, and he cannot throw it for strikes consistently. And the throwing
motion, Gilmesh got better when he had less stuff but could throw it where he wanted.
So maybe we need to Nate Karns needs to suffer an injury, is what you're saying, before he gets to the best version of himself.
He is.
Well, let's not.
I mean, we don't want that at all.
What I will say for Karns right now is I think he's busting out a 12 strikeouts per nine and a 5 walks per nine right now. So it's just all crazy. It's totally nuts.
I kind of feel like that's been a lot of the pitching staff so far. I feel like they're walking tons of guys. They're striking out tons of guys. And it's kind of leading to them a lot of stress. It doesn't feel like any starter has come out and really dominated other than last Sunday when Felix mowed down the A's and, of course, lost because that's what happens when Felix dominates. But other than that, I don't think there's been one game where this rotation, which has not been a disaster, but we all expected it to be good, if not great. It doesn't feel like they've really hit their stride yet. Would you guys agree?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree, too. And Felix especially has been very weird because he's walked 13 batters in 18 innings. And he's given up nine hits in 18 innings. So his, like, everything, like, if you're looking at it at a classic standpoint, his ERA is 1, his WHIP is 1.2. The peripherals may not be as forgiving, understandably so, but nobody's hitting him. It's just been very, very strange.
But they don't have to because he's walked 13 guys in three starts. Yeah,
that Saturday start was weird. That was weird.
The most recent one, you mean?
Yeah, where Felix watched 6 guys tied a career high, I believe.
I just don't. I don't know what's going on there. It sounds like he doesn't really know what's going on. He doesn't. He says he's not hurt. I believe him.
Well, he said he was painting all over the place when he was warming up, and then the game started, and he just lost it.
It sounds like it's all fastball too.
Yeah, that's what they talk about. Felix has talked about that before.
You know, to be fair to the staff,
when he's got it, and then he just loses it the second the game starts. Basketball players talk about that a lot.
I was just going to say, to be fair to the staff, you know, as of live stats right now, they're the 10th rotation or they're the 10th pitching staff in all of baseball. The, you know,
metric?
The walks,
wins,
I guess it would be FWAR, I guess.
Is that what they're measuring? Okay. I don't have it in front.
They, the, you know, the walks per nine is a little high. It's 3. And I think the league average was 2.8. So it's not crazy high. Last year, and then the home runs per nine is actually below 1. So, and you know, the BABIP's a little high as well, but that is what it is, and the home run per fastball is low too. So, I think it's just been some really strange tight games that have been, you know, what we have 4 one run losses of the 7 losses. So, you know, the margins have been slim, and I think Bob Dutton tweeted out that the Mariners are 4-0 if they score 4 runs or more in their. The 1-7 if they don't. So
common trend. Yeah, I think generally speaking, and again, it's been a weird start to the season, but generally speaking, it feels like the team, five game losing streak aside, it just kind of feels like they haven't really gotten into a groove yet. It doesn't feel mm-hmm. like there's any disasters going on. There's nothing on the roster that feels, you know, broken beyond repair or anything like that. It's just they just need to play better. Their players need to start playing up to more of their expectations. And then we should be I think it still looks like a roster that, you know, I had them pegged, I think, at 82 to 84 wins before the season started. And I mm-hmm. definitely think that's about what they look like now with upside for more. There's been nothing to change my mind. So
does it scare you at all that I think until we gave up on the season, or until almost everyone gave up on the season by late August of last year, that was the same thing we were calling for last year? It's like players have to play better. Granted, we're 12 games in, so nothing should really frighten you. But
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think you look at the roster right now, and like Nathan said, there's no real like major points of concern on the roster because the guys that are struggling really bad have good track record. Like we've talked about Adam Lind, and it's like he's going to turn it around, especially if he so severely keeps facing, you know, right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine. Kyle Seager will get hot and he'll be fine. The problem is like right now, if you look at the lineup that they rolled out on Sunday, you've got Seager and Lind going back to back, and then you've got Steve Clevenger sitting behind them. So that, you know, that 5-6-7 is just brutal right now. It's hard to string together. Yeah, right now. And as soon as that comes around, look, I'm not worried about Kyle Seager. I don't think anybody's really worried about Seager. No. There's some mild worry about Lind just because of his age and the fact that he's switching leagues again. But I think it's going to be okay. I'm not super concerned about the consistency of this offense. I mean, we've talked about it before, but it seems like top to bottom, this is a roster where people will get hot and cold. But over time, like this is going to be a pretty consistent offense. It's going to be middle of the road, but it'll be consistent.
I think I largely agree with that. Let's get to some complaining, because I got complaining to do.
Yeah.
Is this airing of grievances?
Yeah, I think that's what this is.
It's not Festivus. We can do it anyway.
It's fine. We're dudes talking into a microphone. We like to complain. It doesn't matter. Nobody's listening to this anyway.
That's our right.
Here's the deal. Okay, this schedule in April is a fucking atrocity. The Mariners essentially have opened the season with the MLB equivalent of a bye week. They played 3 games and had a day off. They played 6 games and had a day off. They had 3 more games and had another day off. This is the team that travels more than any team in baseball, and you only get so many off days. I mean, this team is going to be run through the grinder in July and August and be begging for a day off. But no, they have 3 off days in the first 2 weeks of the season. Not only does that not good for the players, who understandably probably get tired of playing baseball later in the season and don't want days off at the early beginning of the season, it sucks for the fans because we're constantly feeling like the season isn't really getting going. Couple that with this weird ass crap in Cleveland where they're playing games at 3:10 and then 9 in the morning as though it was some sort of like Patriots Day in Boston and they're running an important marathon, or if anything important is happening in that godforsaken hellhole that's going to tap out in the Eastern Conference semifinals. Ooh. And just, ooh. I don't know, man. I'm getting really fired up just talking about it. This schedule is, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, but like, it's baseball season. Let's play some damn baseball. And let's, now, because we can't watch the games that are starting at 3 in the afternoon, it's like 3 weeks in before we really feel like we can get to know these guys. End of my rant.
I think for me, the point of complaint I most have is for the players, because, I mean, just like you were mentioning, the time that you want off is, you know, a couple days here in August, or, you know, maybe late June, you know, around the All-Star break. But what they're getting is they're getting no chance to get into a groove. 3 days off in 2 weeks is just so weird. And April's the month where you just want to play all the way through and get in the zone.
Yeah. It's just, and I feel like this stuff happens with, already it happens with them because of their location, so they have to travel so much for that. But then, you know, starting in Japan, that weird series 3 or 4 years ago, and just feels like all the time the schedules that they make for these guys, some of the road, like here we go, at the end of May, they've got what do they have? They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games to end May in a row, and then 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 games in a row at the end of May and early June, and then one day off, and then what is it? Like 12 more games in a row. So they've got something like 24 games in 25 days, and that's going to be when, you know, guys are starting to get tired and they're starting to want to break, and it's just, I know it's a hard, I'm sure it's a hard job to make a schedule, but it's just really aggravating.
No, it's comical. And then you look at what they go through in July and August too. Like in August, they've got the All-Star break, and then they've got a homestand that's fairly normal. And then they have three games in Toronto, which are at 4, 10 a.m., 10 a.m. And then a day off, and then two games in Pittsburgh that are both at 4, and then a day off, and then three straight 11 a.m. games in Chicago. And that's the beginning of 31 games in, no, 33 games in 34 days.
Good.
Yeah, they have a single off day in all of August.
Just a one. And it's not even like a getaway game. They have a 7 o'clock start at home versus Detroit, and then a day off, and then a 7 p.m. game in Oakland on Friday.
To whom do we address our complaints? Do I just go on to Twitter and just at MLB and start raging at them?
No. Do you ever read that article? It's like a mom and pop shop that makes these schedules.
Wait, what?
It's like, yes. I'm going to find the article real time right now.
They do vinyl stickers for cars, because I could use one.
For the schedule?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like the same old dude.
There you go.
Okay.
The schedule makers. ESPN Films 30 for 30. The story of how a mom and pop team ended up with the daunting and thankless job of MLB scheduling.
You're telling me there's an elderly couple somewhere, like hanging out in the Midwest, that puts all of this together?
Yes.
For a multi-billion dollar industry?
Yes.
Is it Adam Lin's parents?
Oh, wait. They might not do it anymore.
Ooh. This is important because we are trying to be factually accurate in this episode.
We need to know
they don't. Okay, they don't do it anymore.
Oh,
that's too bad. I thought I probably should watch a short. I thought they were still doing it. That's too bad.
Oh, that is.
We could yell at them for setting the precedent for what we now have to deal with.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the whoever makes the schedule generally hates the Seattle Mariners, as indicated when the last time we had a home opener on opening day.
We had it last year, Scott.
Okay,
but that was your year off.
No, I was still running the site then. That was just, I was 1 foot out.
But that was the one, that's been the one in
but that was
eight
the first
or
time
nine seasons.
In a long time. 8 years. Yeah, so. And the other big one, you know, and I don't think this is total, I don't think this is really up to MLB, but the big one, if we're bitching about scheduling, is how long has it been since the Mariners have been on Sunday Night Baseball?
Yeah.
I mean,
crazy.
Yeah. It's the
I mean,
longest
what have they
in
really
MLB
had
now.
To show?
It was the Mariners and the Blue Jays, I think, that were the longest. What have they
those,
show?
Those
I don't
games,
know, David. What do they have to show?
I mean, I would
those
put
games
the team
generally skew East Coast and Central though because of the 5:30 start time.
Yeah, but they can't have a road game. I'm not saying at Safeco. I'm just saying they've never been on. They've never picked up like an East Coast swing, like a
yeah. Why hasn't the Red Sox M's game in Fenway ever been on Sunday night?
Nope,
because they're too busy showing Red Sox Yankees for 4.5
East
hours. Tight
Coast bias,
tight schedule.
The bias is what. Yeah. It's
the bias is strong with this one.
The bias is strong. Anyway, that's my rant with the schedule. It just drives me nuts.
That's fine.
I mean, what do you guys think? Ideally, you go 9 games between off days, like a week and a half,
sure,
sort of a deal.
Yeah, sure.
And ideally, you don't.
Sure. Every other week you have an off day.
Yeah.
I think that's about what it averages out to. And when you take away the All-Star game kind of oddity, I think that's you. Usually what it adds to, you have 2 or 3 off days a week or a month.
Yeah, it's just annoying to have 4 in April, and then you go and you look at August and there's a single one,
especially because April's not even a full month. I mean, they didn't even start playing until the 4th,
and they're
so
fresh. Can we just not go to Cleveland one April, just one? That'd be awesome.
Why does that keep happening?
But everyone needs to see the snow.
God. I guess it's not. I mean, they're we were watching earlier, and poor Ketel Marte, he looks he looks
it's
like
the coldest he's ever
he looks
been.
Like Richard Sherman. That's what Scott said.
How right. Cold is it really in Cleveland?
I think it's
right
like
now?
50 cause degrees
because I gotta find out, because Mike Montgomery is currently out there in just a straight t-shirt.
Well,
it's 50, but the wind is blowing straight in.
Yeah,
so who knows,
it's a cold breeze off of Lake Erie. That's
it's a dry heat.
It's currently 51 degrees.
Poor Kettle, he's dying.
Yeah, all right, well, He's straight bundled in this game.
Okay, I think maybe, are we getting close to where we should maybe think about taking a break? And we have an interview with Seahawks punter and good dude and actually like pretty intense hardcore Mariner fan John Ryan that we can get to. We just recorded that before we went live here. So you guys have anything you want to add before we get to that?
I miss Mark Trumbo.
Oh, okay, you do have something you want to add.
David. Getting in deep.
Get it?
I mean, I can just leave it at that.
But... I mean, everyone that was skipping ahead to the John Ryan interview just got real disappointed.
I miss him. As of right now, he's the 9th best player in baseball, minus pitchers. So
those aren't baseball players, so that's a fair.
I mean, what they if... play baseball every 5 days.
I think that trade, it sounds like revisionist history, but I will just say it. When that trade was made, I didn't like it. Not because I know you love Mark Trumbo. I don't necessarily love Mark Trumbo, the player, but I don't love Steve Clevenger, the player, even less, even more.
Yeah, but it's not about players. That move was about money.
And that's sure.
What did that money buy under the budget? That's the real question. It opened up money to do other things, which they subsequently did, like Wade Miley.
And then they subsequently spent more money than they would have on Mark Trumbo at the same position.
For the combination of
for the platoon
and Deho Lee.
I don't want to talk about it too much because I'll get like physically angry.
We encourage that, though. That makes for good podcasting.
Mark Trumbo is what he is. He is a very streaky player who can be very good at hitting mistake pitches, and he can be very, very bad when pitchers locate against him for long stretches of time.
All I know is that I watched Wellington Castillo hit a home run last night. So
now that's a trade that doesn't make any sense.
Anyway, we don't need to
get Trumbo in the first
place.
David,
you miss Mark Trumbo, and with Adam Lind hitting like shit, I kind of miss him too. Especially when I'm watching game-winning runs get scored through Steve Clevenger's five hole.
Through the five hole.
Yeah. What are you going to do? All right, guys.
Right through the wickets.
Let's take a break and get to John Ryan. You guys hold tight with us. We'll have a quick break and we'll be right back.
Think about the good times, you and I. Because, baby, now we got that. You know we used to have that. Take a look at what you've done. Baby, now we got that.
Welcome back to Dome and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. Today we are so excited to be joined by a very familiar guest. You know him from throwing touchdown passes in the NFC Championship game, punting coffin corners, having a sweet mullet. His name is John Ryan. John, thanks so much for being with us.
Man, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so I think when we asked for questions on Twitter about having you on, the most common one we got is something along the lines of why the Mariners. Is that fandom, did that start when you came to Seattle, or was there something before that?
Well, it's funny because it kind of started before that without even really knowing it. I played in Green Bay, Wisconsin in 2006 and 2007, and they have a single-A affiliate, low A team. Back then it was affiliated with the Mariners, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. I started watching them with, you know, I saw guys, Michael Pineda, Michael Saunders, Carlos Kruenfel, you know, a bunch of guys that really panned out for us. I moved to Seattle a few years later and then just kind of kept on watching some of those guys, you know, come through the system and play for the Mariners. And I love baseball, so I went to a lot of baseball games here. And that just kind of turned into, you know, over the years, kind of fell in love with the city and kind of became you know, a local, really, and you know, just kind of fell in love with the Mariners. Although it's been hard sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes.
So you grew up playing baseball in Saskatchewan? Then were you a three sport guy growing up?
Well, seriously, I was a four sometimes five sport guy, and baseball was kind of the one that kind of got left out when I got a little bit older. When I kind of got to high school, I had to kind of pick a spring sport. It was lacrosse or baseball, and you know, at that age, you know, you're so full of energy and everything that baseball wasn't that sexy to me at the time. You know,
sure.
Lacrosse, playing a game like that where you run around and hit people with a stick seemed a lot more appealing to me.
But now
as I got older, you kind of understand the intricacies of baseball. Kind of appreciate it a lot more. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, believe it or not, my favorite sport now.
Well, baseball's sexy, John. Let's be honest.
Have you seen the bands?
Yeah. You guys, David, you have anything for John? What do you have?
Well, I was gonna start with. So, what did you play in baseball back when you were growing up?
I was fast. I played center field. I was a leadoff hitter. You know, as I said, didn't really get play past, you know, 13 or 14, but
sure.
I was a decent player. You know, I always made the little league all-star teams and stuff, but, I don't think that wasn't my love at the time.
Who's your player comp? I mean, who's your 13-year-old MLB player comp? Were you talking like a Peter Borges type?
That's a good question. You know, but Little League, I had a little bit of pop in Little League, so I could hit the ball out. So I don't know, I stole, 40, 50 bases a year.
Jeez.
In my head, I probably considered myself like a Ricky Henderson, or I was living at the time, so probably like a Devon White.
Yeah. It sounds like Eric Davis, honestly, when I hear the description.
I'll take it.
Yeah, speedy, rangy, power first.
13-year-old John Ryan will take it.
I had a higher calling, and it was football. I want to get back to baseball too, but I'm sure you've answered this question a bunch of times, but just really quick, how do you end up becoming a punter? You know, it seems like it's such a niche, an important but a kind of a weird part of football. It's not like the rest of it. How does that happen? Did you have a soccer background?
Not at all. I've never played soccer in my life, and I'm really proud of that. It started off just really from my love of football. You know, as growing up, five, six, 7 years old, I love football. Couldn't get enough of it. 7 years old, we'd play on the play at recess, and then come home and we'd end up playing in the backyard or on the street, and then eventually the kids would get bored or have to go for dinner, and my brother and I were kind of just left the football, and we'd end up playing one-on-one football or just play catch or whatever, and then he'd end up getting bored after a few hours, and then it really was just me and a football. And the only thing you can do if you're alone with a football is kick it. That's honestly how it started. It just kind of stemmed from my love of football.
Wow, that's really interesting.
John, do you have a could you think of a positional equivalent in baseball to the punter in football?
I don't know. I was kind of thinking of it as a middle reliever type guy. Mm. You don't really know you're gonna get called on, but you got to be ready. Sometimes you're not called on often, but when you are, you're kind of put on the spot.
I think that's kind of where I was thinking. It's sort of like a long reliever where, like, theoretically, if the game's played perfectly, you are never needed.
Right.
It's the John Gray position.
Yeah. John, is there a since you've been in the city since 2008, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So you've been here for a while now. So if you're going to games and really falling in love with the sport, are there memories that you've maybe had a chance to take in at Safeco, like a game you've seen that really stands out to you as like a special memory?
You know, this one sounds, they haven't had a lot of great, they haven't had any great teams in the last 8 years.
It's true.
They've had some great players,
And yeah.
I'm a huge, huge Felix fan and, had the chance to meet him a few times, and he's just a cool guy. And I remember the game a couple years ago, the game after he threw the no-hitter.
Uh-huh.
And they had the Supreme Court, I guess they called it, for his next start, where the whole stadium was yellow, and I think it was pretty much sold out. And it just like the atmosphere in that game, it felt like a playoff game. And it just like it was such a great atmosphere. It wasn't I don't even remember the score of that game or anything. I really remember being there and just thinking like, this is baseball. This is really cool.
Yeah. I think we talked about this on the podcast last week towards the end for a little bit, but obviously the city is famous for the atmosphere that we create at CenturyLink for you guys when you play on Sundays. And one of the things that we've always talked about, because we remember when the Mariners were really good in the 90s, was the ability to bring that kind of atmosphere and that kind of attitude two baseball games. And I think what you're describing is something like that. It would be really cool. We really want to see the team create that kind of 12th man atmosphere that you get at Seahawks games, but bring that to Safeco, just that noise. And I think it will happen when the team makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it will happen. You see if you ever been to a Sounders game, and
yeah.
Obviously if you ever been to any of our games, it's electric there, and the team, the city's just looking for a winner, and that's, you can't blame them for that, but, like last week, having 13,000 fans out, I think 2 days in a row is not the greatest thing, And that's not it's not great for the players or great for the fans, It's not a good atmosphere to watch baseball in.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the team so far this year? They're off to a kind of an okay start at 5-7. Has anything stood out to you in the early season?
I think Felix always, my favorite player, Felix. He's doing his thing, without a fastball, which is impressive as it is, I'm liking some of the guys, I think Marte's look good at times. Martin has looked good at times. you know, Cano still, you know, hasn't, you know, he came out there the first couple games, was hitting home runs, and I was like, this is finally the Cano we paid all that money for. And
yeah.
not sure. And then, you know, Seager's been, you know, disappointment again.
Yeah.
We're looking at a really small sample size, you know, the 12 games, 13 going
on. Exactly.
I mean, really small, but, you know, I wasn't as impressed with him last year. And, you know, who knows? I mean, hopefully he kind of snaps out that and doesn't get that Dustin Ackley effect or anything.
We all should hope for that.
You can't speak that name on the podcast, John. We're going to have to edit that part.
You didn't see me, but I just turned my head and spit when I said it.
You spit on my discarded jersey that now sits in a crumpled up corner in my office. Hey, John, I kind of related question. One thing, you know, as we talk about on the site and in baseball in general, is we always talk about sample size as it is kind of a real numbers game and things like that. As it relates to football and as a player, when you talk about statistics and even when your own statistics are brought up, the sample size has got to be so, so small in the early going. And what is it like to, you know, sit back and sometimes listen and see what people say online and make conclusions about performance on minuscule sample sizes?
It's really annoying because, you know, as it is, like as a punter, you know, especially punting for a team like this, you're getting, yeah, you know, 55, 60 punts a year, you know? So a couple things go wrong. I mean, you know, that would be like giving a guy a batting average after 60 at bats, and that's just what goes on the back of his trading card. You know, that's not always fair and doesn't always tell the whole story. And I hate it and I love it at the same time because I'm a big numbers guy and I've always been a big stat guy. And then when it applies to me, then I get all defensive about it. So, it is kind of hard sometimes, you know, because, you know, a lot of times you'll punt. There's games where I punt 1, 2, 3 times. And then, you know, they're like, oh, you only averaged 37 yards today. I'm like, well, I'm kicking from their 35-yard line because we're going. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what you want me to do. Not that I get angry about it or anything.
No, obviously not. Sure.
Of course not.
Hey, John, I'm watching right now and Kyle Seager just got a single. He hears you.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that batting average is 116 now?
Hey,
oh, no,
hey,
118.
You know.
118. It's creeping up there.
That's also the thing is, you know, people, even my fiance is a huge Angels fan.
Oh, no.
And,
I
know. And she has been since she was a little kid. So,
she's the one.
Pardon me?
So she's the one then, the one Angels fan.
Yeah. No, well, she lives in LA. So, you know, we live there in the offseason, so I get to watch them a lot. But you hear all the fans out there, you know, bitching and complaining about Mike Trout this year. He's starting off, he's like 240 right now or something. I'm like, this kid could get hot and be batting 330 by next weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, at this stage, if you go 4-for-4, that batting average is jumping 40 points.
Looking at such small sample sizes. But,
well, it's,
you know,
the same thing with your punts. I mean, they say 37 yards, and you know, the ball rolls one less time and gets down on the half-yard line, it's a great punt. But if it rolls two more times, the other team gets the ball on the 20, and all of a sudden your net punt average is cut in half or something like that.
Or if you hit that perfect end-over-end punt, it lands on the 5 and kicks straight back to the 12 or 13, and then all of a sudden it looks like...
So I have to ask one question, because outside of why in the shit are you a Mariners fan, which was the most common one that we got, was another one was that picture of you with your hair wearing the Randy Johnson t-shirt. You know the one that I'm talking about?
Yeah.
People want to know if that hair has any chance of coming back, or if there was impetus for it going away, or what the story is there.
I think I just mentioned my fiance, so everyone knows it's not coming back.
It's over.
I figured it
was. Single wild Randy Johnson lookalike, John Ryan. But yeah, that actually came too. I had the long hair. I'd been growing it out for charity, and that's just when those t-shirts start coming out, like the Randy Johnson. There's you know, every team has a couple guys, and I was like, man, I could definitely look like that if I tried. So it was my brother's bachelor party was coming up, and we were going to Mariners games for his bachelor party. So I said, I'm definitely, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to look like that for the bachelor party.
That's amazing.
You never by any chance met Randy while you had that hair, did you?
No, I've never met him. Either way.
Oh, okay, that would have been a great picture.
He likes photography and Metallica. Perhaps your paths will cross sometime.
John, is there a tradition that you have at Safeco where it's like, or a food spot that you always feel like you need to hit, or a place that you always want to get to when you go to a game? Do you have anything like that at the stadium?
Well, when I first got here, my season tickets were kind of behind home plate, 35 rows up, and it was, okay. I don't remember the place, but I just remember it was like right by the one beer stand that sold Manny's.
Mm.
It was like, I don't even know what it's called, but that was just my my go-to place, and you know, in between innings you get Manny's. But now I'm kind of spoiled now because I got, you know, season tickets in the Diamond Club, so yeah. There's, you know.
Moving on up.
Yeah, it comes to you.
John, are you a beer guy?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you like to drink? Do you like some of the local beers? I mean, you just said Manny's, so obviously.
Yeah, I like the local stuff. You know, that's actually how I kind of, well, I grew up in Canada where.
Of like, course you like beer. What a dumb question.
Yeah. Don't embarrass us, Nathan.
I mean, yeah, my first beer had a nipple on it. So that, yeah, you're kind of born that way. But when I moved out here, I kind of really got into, you know, some of the microbrews and stuff and just, you know, all that, like all the stuff from Georgetown Brewery. They've been good to me over the years. So there's a lot of good beer out here.
Yeah, for sure.
Good beer at the Mariners games too. The selection has gone up and up and up.
So yeah, they have a lot of microbrews. It's great.
Do you guys have any last questions for John before we let him go about his day?
I think David had a question about Brandon Browner.
Oh, I did have a Brandon. I had a plus or minus 10.5 personal fouls for Browner.
Yeah, I mean, he's never met a yellow flag he didn't like.
But... Hey, I'm not complaining.
We say it in all love. We love
yeah,
Brandon
exactly.
Browner.
So do I. So do I. He's a great football player. You know, he was a Pro Bowler, I think, the first year he was here.
Yeah.
Yep. If not the second year. But, I mean, he's a great football player and kind of the original, you know, LOB, you know, kind of getting the band back together. Yeah, you know, so sure. It's pretty cool to have him back, and I think he's, you know, a leader in the locker room. And, you know, a guy like Chris Clemens, too, you know, get a guy back like that who's a leader and the things that he does, you know, not only during the week but on game day to really take that leadership role. I mean, it's gonna really make a difference with this team again.
Hey, John, we – go ahead. Sorry, Scott, did I cut you off?
Oh, I was just saying now, plus you've got two former CFL – All-Stars on the roster.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey, John, we really appreciate your time. I just got one. I have one last question for you. I mean, it sounds like you're a long-term fan like a lot of us, so you know what being a Mariner fan is all about. Obviously, we all desperately want the playoffs from this year's team, but is there an expectation level for you that you have this year? Is there something that you really want to see? Like, how are you feeling good with this new GM and where the organization is headed?
It's still up in the air to me. You know, to hear, like, you know, to have a GM that's, or to have a manager who's never managed a game of baseball in his life is, you know, a little scary. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that can go either way, you know. So, you know, before the year, I thought they'd win 87 games.
Ooh, I like it.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I don't know. I always say, you know, keep it around 500 to the All-Star break, and then you kind of make the move, or you see kind of where the teams start to separate.
Yep.
But, you know, it'd be awesome to see a playoff baseball back here.
Oh, man. We'd love it. I mean, the only thing is that you would hope it doesn't cross over with your guys' schedule so you could come out and see it because it'd be in October.
Oh, yeah. No, it would kill me.
Yeah.
It would kill me.
Well, John, we really, really appreciate your time, man. We've really enjoyed watching you play over the years, and it's just been a real pleasure to have you. Good luck in the upcoming season and mini camps and all that stuff. And tell your wife hi and that we're a big fan of hers, but we have to root against the Angels a lot.
I root against them too, but I appreciate that, and I'll be on anytime.
Thanks so much, John. Take care.
All right, thanks, John.
Back again. We are so thankful to John Ryan again for joining us. You guys, we failed to discuss our choices of beverage at the beginning of the episode, and that will not stand. So, David, what are you consuming this fine afternoon?
All right. Currently working on the Alesian Hawaiian Sunburn Pineapple Habanero Sour.
I just can't with that description.
I know. Well, I mean, this is literally the beer I'm drinking.
How is it?
It's pretty good. I just finished an apple off air, and it's plain funny things with the beer taste. But before the apple, it tasted great, and I'm sure I'll get back in the zone with it soon.
Can we get this guy some rice crackers, reset the palate?
If we could get some like Christini's, that'd be great. Do want to give a quick shout out to Chateau Louis Jadot, which I was enjoying their Chardonnay while talking to John.
I thought I was the wine guy. We set up things saying I was the wine guy.
David's just the French pronouncer.
I mean, clearly, if you look at the qualifications, I am definitely more qualified than David.
You are well above me in the wine spectrum of things.
Well, you make wine, but Scott's the one that drinks all of it.
Well, Scott's the one who knows about it. Yeah.
So really, I mean, we know that we know more about baseball than the players who play it. Obviously, that's why we have a podcast and they don't.
Clearly.
So.
It comes together.
Same.
Scott,
same.
Are you drinking alcohol?
I am. I am drinking the Elysian Super Fuzz Blood Orange Pale Ale, which is really one of my favorite summer beers. I like that one too. It's just so drinkable. You can drink a whole six pack of them and not bat an eye.
So you guys are both drinking Elysian.
This is the second time one of you has copied me.
We got to stop letting you go first. Because then you'll be copying
as
us.
If you could ever stop me.
Well, I'm not the one in charge of sequencing of questions.
Nathan, what are you drinking?
I am.
That is true. I used to be a lot of things.
I used to be a big deal. I am drinking the Elysian. No, I'm just kidding. I'm drinking the Silver. It's hot. Have you guys noticed that it's hot? It's very unseasonably warm. So I'm drinking the summer lager Ziggy Zaggy by Silver City.
I just had that.
Yeah.
I had that on tap down at I'll shout out a little hidden gem for all you North Enders. Elliott Bay Pizza in Mill Creek. It's got one of the best tap lists in the Western
friggin' world.
We'll call it Western Washington. And usually most of the beer consists of really special release stuff that's in the 12% plus range, but they always have some lower stuff, which is great for a secondary or third beer. If you are driving, if you are not, it's great for never.
It's also hot. It's also good for hot days like today.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here at 512.
That beer's got a real interesting finish to it.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
It's a really like it's a long sustain on that finish.
Yeah, it really goes down. It's a little higher ABV actually than I have in a lot of lagers. At 5%, which is still perfectly fine, totally sessionable. And you guys, Kyle Seager just hit a home run. So. Mm. Let there be wild rejoicing. Now John feels bad for making fun of Kyle. I'm sure. Kyle is actually now 2 for 2, I believe, since John made that initial somewhat disparaging.
Maybe that's what we needed.
Maybe we...
Kyle loves Cleveland.
Yes,
and Leonis Martin just ripped an absolute cracker into the corner for a double.
Does this constitute broadcasting the game without the express written consent of MLB?
Should we write
No, to do that, we'd have to give some weird commentary on the fans.
We could do that.
There were a couple of ladies drinking wine, right? And that like weird, like Cleveland's got that like weird, like dugout where fans can watch the game right behind home plate, behind a screen. And is that an awesome place to watch the game though?
I don't know.
I'm sure it is awesome, but it also seems very weird. It's almost like when they have like the Final Four and they have to sit on the bench that's like 6 feet recessed from the court. And I'm like, can they really see anything?
Well, and that's so as long as we're talking about weird like features you can pay into. How about that like porch dining scenario in Tampa Bay?
Oh,
yeah.
Like what if you went to a Chili's, but also people were playing baseball inside the Chili's?
Then I would be I'm in Florida. Well,
are there sizzling fajitas? That changes everything.
How's the queso dip?
How's the jalapeno
cheddar?
Can I get a cheddar?
Speckled lemonade?
How's the cheddar popper boppers? Are they pretty good?
You guys, I want your guys' opinion on something. So yesterday, because I'm filled with self-loathing that I feel the need to spread around everyone that I come into contact with, I recapped the improbable return, the Mariners blowing a 14-2 lead in Cleveland in 2001.
Isn't that Apollo 11?
Yes, maybe. Wait, Apollo Ono?
That was the improbable skate.
The improbable 8? I like that movie. And then I was struck by, in that improbable return, as I was writing about it, reliving that asshole who sits at every Indians game banging that drum.
boom, boom.
It
they
drives me.
Showed him in this game.
It drives me up the wall. Is that just my neuroses, or do you guys find that just? I mean, I respect the commitment to it, but it's such an obnoxious intrusion to my game intake that, like, I just want to strangle the dude. Do you guys? Does it not bother you guys?
It would bother me if I had to sit next to him.
Well, no one has to sit next to him. There's never more than 50 people at the Jake these days.
There is someone that sits right next to him when they show him on screen.
My question is, like, if you're that guy, and he hasn't, like, isn't he a well-known name?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't missed a game in something like 20 years. Yeah.
If you're that guy, like, how, you can never bring a friend to the baseball game.
The drum is his only
friend. What if he brings Randy Quaid from Major League?
What if he brings Dennis Quaid from Rookie?
The drum is his friend. And he's named it Steven. They go to every game together.
Steven's on the beat.
They talk together. It's a complex rhythm. It goes boom, 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 boom.
Well, I'm just trying to imagine, like, you've signed a future of never enjoying live baseball with anyone else. Like, hey, you guys want to come? I got three seats, but I'm going to be drumming.
Spoiler. Beat the shit out of this drum the entire time.
I don't know if that'll bother you guys. You guys think that'll be cool?
Will that be fine for you?
Plus, it's in the very last row.
Yep.
The worst seat in the house.
Did you guys see that earlier in this homestand for Cleveland last week that there was a couple in the upper deck that was caught engaging in coitus? Like, no, the safe go equivalent of, like, you know, that upper 300 level that
he
ever sits in. They were like in the top row of that.
It was a full mountain.
Also,
job.
Like the drummer, just banging
no
away.
No way.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
How did I miss that?
She was riding that pony.
I'm just a bachelor.
We got to go back to episode two. We got to reuse that intro music.
Yeah, we should come
That's
in.
That's incredible.
Is it different if we outro it?
Yeah, we should outro with Pony. We'll outro with Pony for this.
See, this is what three off days in 2 weeks does to us. It's like, what baseball are we supposed to talk about? People
talk
are
about
having sex and Jacob.
Yeah. I mean, that's not our worst topic, honestly.
Someone named Manship is warming up for the Indians right now.
Speaking of sex, Manship's up and moving around.
Hard a starboard.
Three sheets to the wind.
Three sheets to the wind.
It's only 5:20. It's a long night, guys. We might get there.
We really might. You guys, let's end with a quick question that we've kind of talked about some just silly stuff that we were, you know, we kind of did that Quidditch draft a little while ago. Let's do this one. If you could take one Mariner on a deserted island, deserted island Mariners, tropical island Mariners, who are you going to go with and why?
Do we also get three items, or is it just the Mariner?
Is it current or former?
Any. Organizational history.
Any. Oh, org history.
Yeah. Like, whoever you want to be. It has to be a player, though. You can't take, like, Rick Griffin to keep you alive.
That would be smart.
It would be.
Rick Griffin for all your hot tub installation needs.
Rick Griffin's the one that turns he's the one that's turns it into, you guys see Swiss Family Robinson? He's the one that does all that stuff. Makes the giant pile of rolling logs and the coconut bombs.
And the Swiss Family Robinson's the one with all the animals, right?
Yeah, it's where the people, like, they actually film humans, like, riding ostriches. It's freaking awesome.
I think I want to be stranded on a desert island with Ricky Henderson.
Ooh.
Because after 2 months being just the two of us, he'd still ask what my name was.
It would still feel new.
Who are you? Go get me some coconut.
Hi, my name's Ricky. Next morning. Hi, my name's Ricky. Ricky is very glad to meet you.
Nathan, I think you need to go here. I need to think for a bit.
Okay, desert island Mariner. A Mariner that I would want to, you know, what kind of tropical island am I dealing? You got one?
I totally just, you said tropical island. I know exactly who it is.
Hit it up.
It's Brett Boone. Me and him are wearing Tommy Bahama for the rest of our lives. just chilling. Frosting the tips, hitting bombs. Hoping that the island is the one where Jack Sparrow finds himself with whoever Keira Knightley's character is from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Uh-huh. Sure. The governor's,
you know, the
island.
Rum Runner Island.
It's the Chester of Tortuga.
Yes, yeah. I'm hoping me and Brett find ourselves there. And we just
Well, it's a deserted deserted tropical island. It's just you and Brett.
Yeah, but that one also came with a cache of rum. And that sounds wonderful.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't mean that they're also there. I just mean that him Rep and I are
loves
there.
The fuck out of rum. Let's be real.
Is he a Ronnie D or does he like is he top shelf?
Ronrico? Ronrico is that's me in college, man.
Is it Malibu? Rico. Like kind of that coconut fancy.
Okay.
Well, he actually uses the Malibu to also frost his tips.
Because you're gonna have to like figure out a way to make that out of the stuff that you have on hand on the island. You can't just go to the store. You'll have to like MacGyver some hair.
He frosts his tips with aloe leaves, coconut.
It's lemon juice.
And Ronrico. That's it.
Lemon juice is all you need. Lemon juice in
what
the hair.
What island have we got lemons on too?
You know who I'm
Catalina.
You know who I'm gonna take. I think I'm taking Randy.
Randy.
Yeah, I'm taking Randy because
he is that tall.
Yeah, because he can get us the coconuts. You know.
Oh yeah.
He's just reaching up there and grabbing them.
All you gotta do is just bang the tree. I mean, Justin Smoke would suffice, obviously.
I don't know. Depends. Are you the tree, Scott? We can still take a swing at that.
Justin Smoke and I would live in two tiers. I'd be in the upper tier and he'd be in the lower tier, and I'd be like, hey, toss me that coconut, and it would land 5 feet short every time.
Can I tell this story on the air?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. I found out a couple months ago that back when Scott used to run the site, that a few of the players, the Mariners of the era, used to check in with LL recently. And I don't want to reveal my source, but the close to the direct quote that apparently we got from Justin Smoke one time was, if I ever see that Scott Weber, I'm kicking his ass. Just such a glorious mental image to see.
Come at me. Come at me, bro.
Justin Smoke chasing Scott around. And Scott, you're not quite as big as Justin. So
no, just, I am a tall but slender man.
Yeah. So it's just,
Scott, what's your 60 time? You think you could run like a
my 60 time? What's the
yeah.
I can't do that math translation.
That's what they run in baseball.
Did not finish. They don't run a 60 in baseball.
Yes, they do. That's how you check the second base time.
I think I got a Tim Duncan DNF.
I choose not to run.
There it is. There it is.
My dad had a theory that when I was I think it was when I was playing 14U ball, that would have been Edgar's last year, that I was faster than Edgar Martinez as a 13-year-old.
Wait,
which
that's possible.
I mean, without the hamstrings, it might have been true.
Well, here's the moral of that story. Justin Smoke obviously proved me wrong, and he got the last laugh.
He certainly did. Oh. He proved you wrong.
He absolutely proved me wrong.
He is now the Blue Jays bloggers' favorite son to come in and be their starting first baseman as of today, I believe is what I read.
Yeah.
You guys, open question. Who is the slowest Mariner position player of all time?
That's a great segue, because underrated on the slow factor is actually John Olerud. That guy was unbelievably slow.
Yeah, and he ran like, I've never done this shit before, and I have no idea what I'm doing. Like,
he just won Pac-12 Player of the Century.
Yeah, he was amazing at Wild
Wow. today.
He went directly from college to MLB. Never played a minor league game in his entire career.
Yeah. Is that just baseball, or did he win it over everybody? Like, did he win it over Adam Keefe?
I can't answer that. It was him or Ryan Lee.
So he was amazingly slow, and he hit for the cycle. In San
Diego. So did Dan Wilson.
Dan Wilson did not hit for the cycle. He hit inside the park grand slam.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you know who did was
mind.
Jay Buhner, also underratedly slow.
Buhner was very, very slow.
He did not get after it. But, I mean, those guys. So do you think, would you put Olerud against Edgar? It's
No. Slow up. We have a Lookout Lanning Dome and Bedlam podcast definition of getting after it, and it's crushing some beers, and Jay Buhner definitely got after it.
Oh,
Wade Boggs style Jay Buhner definitely still gets after it, no doubt.
Oh yeah. I mean,
beers and more beers. Sounds like the rest of my night, am I right, guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us are trying to pass judgment when we make that observation. So who wins in a foot race, Edgar Martinez or Jay Buhner? I mean, not Jay Buhner. Edgar Martinez or John Olerud?
In 2001?
At their, yeah, sure, 2000.
Yeah, 2001.
I actually think Edgar wins.
I think it is really? Edgar.
Man, I Olerud, I have distinct memories as being the slowest baseball player I've ever seen for a guy that doesn't look like he should be that slow.
Well, God love him because he did a lot to try to fix this, but like 2014 spring training, Jesus Montero has to be on that list, right? Like when he showed up 30 pounds overweight.
I was going to say the one that sticks out in my mind as being slower than he should have been was Jose Lopez.
Lopez was very slow, but he wasn't. I mean, he's not in a, if you're doing a pound for pound argument.
It's true. It's true.
Yep.
Yeah, he's not like ungodly slow.
Who is the fastest Mariner of all time? Brian Hunter?
Eric Burns.
rode a tricycle like you would not believe.
Especially pressing the issue from third to home.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, 2001 Ichiro is very memorable.
Yeah, Vince Coleman was definitely
Vince Coleman.
I just always remember Brian L. Hunter scoring from second on a ground ball to first in the Kingdom. And the guy couldn't hit for crap, but he was very fast. Ricky Henderson was not at his peak.
No,
he was
not a peak speed Mariner. No, not even remotely. No,
not at all.
So Ketel Marte is pretty damn fast, actually.
Yeah.
He's not, well, he's not if in he that gets, stratosphere.
So something to look forward to for the listener is if he gets called up, Guillermo Heredia runs a 60 in like 6.8, which is a true 80 speed tool. So if that guy throws on a Mariner uniform this year and steals a base, he might actually be the fastest Mariner.
And I've been loving...
The thing that I'm interested to see in him is that speed does not necessarily equal great base stealing. You've seen that. I think James Jones is the ultimate example of that. If you're talking straight line speed, I think James Jones can get it with anybody, but he wasn't a great base runner.
Or a defender, for that matter. Also ran terrible routes. You guys have anything you want to wrap up with, or should we just call it a day and maybe actually get to watch some Mariners without a day off in the coming week and pick this up next week? David, you're traveling. Is that true?
Yes. Yes. Next week I will be in Charleston, South Carolina for my first time south of Virginia on the in the true South.
David is joining the cast of Southern Charm on Bravo.
Yes. Real Housewives of Charleston.
No, he's actually going to be on season 3. You guys, he's leaving the site.
I'm sorry to announce it this way, but there was a higher call.
David, it has been having you on the site. It has
to be honest, the whole thing has been a ploy to get into a Lifetime show. So I like my Hallmark has called me. I think I'm going to be doing a few holiday movies. It's going to be good.
Looking forward to it. You're great in a bowler hat. You'll have a
fantastic. You and Jonathan Silverman just co-starring in Hallmark.
In Love for Real.
Beethoven's Eighth.
Actually, an underrated symphony of Beethoven's. All right, so David's going to be out next week.
You were going to bite on that.
We may have a co-host, and we'll see how it goes next week. We're going to wrap this up so we can try to see if the Mariners can come back. They're currently losing 3-1 in the bottom of the 7th inning. Thank you so much for listening, David and Scott. We appreciate your time. A huge, huge thanks again to John Ryan for making the time to join us. And for now, we say farewell again, and we will see you guys next week. Yams.
Ways. The trap you'd and the use you before.